got one question for you. Are you ready?
Hey, 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 everybody. We are live with an amazing guest. One of the best musicians I have heard in a very, very long time. And his range is absolutely amazing in music. John Butcher, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Andy? How are you, James?
We're doing excellent. We are so happy to have you on. James was, I think, for the first time in a long time, he's like, I cannot wait to talk to this guest. And he was hitting me up like Monday saying, I cannot wait.
Excellent. I'm looking forward.
I made all the promo video, whatever. Sure. And I got that. I had to get that out at the beginning of the week.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really fun. And you know, we were just talking about this. Your music ranges from early 80s, maybe even a little bit before then. And now it's hitting, you know, you have a new album that's coming out with 10 new tracks. I mean, it's just phenomenal. I mean, what a journey.
Well, it's important to stay busy. I found out that it's better for me to be swimming. I'm like the great white shark. As long as I'm swimming forward, it's groovy. So I guess that's the way I've seen the last, 10 albums in I don't know how many years. We just keep swimming forward.
That's really good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So what did, I don't even know what that was saying. So this is where we talk a little bit about, so this is Tasty Licks and you guys are watching it. We are absolutely live with one of the best musicians. And so we're going to talk a little bit about food as we always do. And me and James always have a little bit of a competition. We don't require the guests so much to bring their own desserts, but I try to compete with the chef who is a professional chef. And today I brought sorbito. It's like sorbet, but it's non-dairy, and it's, I bought it. I didn't make it.
But I know what that is. My wife, Lorinda, is a fan. So there's some of that in the freezer right now. I could show you.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. And that is my, I'm in Arizona. So it's 104 today. I needed something a little bit, and you can tell that I've already kind of dived into a little bit. I needed something to cool off a little bit because it was hot. It's, you know, it's September, almost October, and it is still 100 degrees here. I mean, I live in the desert, so we
not
expect
here. We're
that.
We're nice and balmy. Oh, we're all comfortable. Everybody's sitting by the pool.
So. There you go.
Now, where are you located, John? Where are you located, John?
I'm north of Boston in a seacoast town called Gloucester, Mass. And it's a fisherman's town for the last 200 years. We're right at the ocean. And for the last, I don't know how many centuries, fishermen have come here to ply their trade and to go whaling. And it's turned into an artist community over the years. There's a lot of musicians and colleagues of mine, painters, especially painters, and photographers who live here and call it home. So I'm pretty comfortable here in Gloucester. I like it very much.
Oh, I love it.
That's amazing.
I love it.
I've only been to Boston once or twice a while ago, but yeah, it's beautiful there.
Yeah, and we live right on the water. My house, I could throw a rock and hit the water from here. And so I like it. It's my first time living at the ocean. So I can't complain. It doesn't completely suck.
I have never really been to Boston. I haven't really been to the Northeast, and now it just gives me a reason to really want to go. Now, so this is we have a couple. So actually, let's get to the champion, the dessert master. Let's get to him really quick, and then we'll talk to you about some food. So, what did you bring, James? What did you got? What's your game?
Banana nut muffin.
Banana nut muffin.
I think James is frozen.
I think James did freeze.
I think he checked out.
Do you know what I think it is? Is that what? I think that the sorbito was so amazingly overpowering that he gave up already. He's like, hey, banana. I think he just said banana. He just brought a banana. That's all he said.
He's back. James, are you back?
Am I all right now? Am I all right?
You sound like you're better. You sound like you're better.
Am I back?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Banana nut muffins.
Banana nut muffins. Banana and you muffins. Know what? The thing is, the thing about it is these are homemade. So these are, you can't compete. He probably ground the flour himself. So, here is the question for you. You have been touring a very long time. What is your go-to food for touring?
Mandarin oranges. The little segments that you can sometimes find in the can, I like to put those in the refrigerator or even better, the freezer. Then I open them up and they're a frozen treat. That's the little mandarin orange segments. That's my favorite.
Very nice. That's actually and healthy.
I can't help myself.
Love it. So now we'll definitely, what a career. I really want to talk about your music. It ranges back from, the beginning of the 80s.
Yeah.
And absolutely, I see albums out in 83. And it was absolutely amazing. And I see that a lot of your musical influences are from the Beatles. You're talking John Lennon, you're talking about some of the really classic folks. Who else is on the list of your influences that made you as the musician you are today?
Well, I can name the musicians I think that made me want to do this. One of them is Ritchie Havens. I saw his, when I was in junior high school, and I saw the movie Woodstock. And I saw his performance at Woodstock with just an acoustic guitar. And that looked really good to me. That looked like something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And I think that when I think about influences, I have to name Albert King and in fact, B.B. King, for that matter. Guys who not only played guitar, but sang and played guitar. That made a big impression on me. And so when Jimi Hendrix came along, it sort of crystallized. You know, that seed was already planted, when I saw and heard B.B. King, that you could not only play, but you could sing in a way that complemented your playing and vice versa. And I think that's what Jimmy did. And so that's what I tried to apply to my music.
Right.
I would say you've definitely done that, right? I've been just blown away by, and it's versatile. The versatility that I hear every song's a little different. I heard some Spanish acoustic stuff today.
Yeah.
I heard blues that I could just, I love the blues. I heard slide guitar going down. Yeah. Go ahead.
These are all the things that as a kid, made me tick. I mean, when you hear something that I did, say on this new record, it's sort of a culmination of all of the things that I've always liked. I remember when you could listen to the radio and from one song to the next, it was different. It could be Jimi Hendrix to the Cowsills and the Cowsills to B.B. King, all in the same in the same 10-minute span. And I like that. It made a big impression on me that you didn't have to be boxed. You didn't have to be sort of categorized in a way that was restraining and restrictive. So I like making records that have lots of different facets because it makes it more interesting for me as a player and a writer. And I think it makes it more interesting for people to listen to.
I totally agree. James, I know you've done some research and you've listened. What is some of your questions and also some of your, what you were loving?
I didn't notice until earlier on the banners. Check the banner.
Is it saying something weird? Banners. Sure. Oh, banners.
Sure. The viewers table.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Everybody's been saying it in the chat, and I'm like, I didn't want to interrupt John because he was talking.
Go ahead.
Yes.
I didn't know if you were looking at it. I sent you like a private message and there. I think everybody else is probably sending you messages, so you probably got messages on
Andy,
on
the music, the channel. I know. Anyway, so James, what was your question? So I know that you've been listening all week.
Oh yeah. I didn't really know how far back you went back towards like the 80s and knowing that you even toured with Jay Giles Band. And I even told my mom
he was like, she even told my mom that
she thought that was really cool. And she enjoyed music as well. So I have anybody that I could listen to your music. So, and they enjoyed it. So, cool. But yeah. What's been like your most your memorable moments, like some kind of good moments or any kind of bad moments that you've experienced throughout like your, cause you have a really extensive,
moments.
How far back it went.
I don't know. It's hard to pick a moment out of 25 years. But you know what I mean? I guess it's not impossible, but it's kind of tough. Look, I will say this. I have been really lucky all of my life by way of opportunities and gigs and meeting people to work with. One of the best things that ever happened to me was opening up for the Jay Giles Band. My band Axis opened up for the Giles Band for 72 cities, I think it was, or 82. And it did everything to sort of forge us into a live act. And those guys were very generous to us. Peter Wolf and all of them, Danny, every one of the guys in the band were generous to a fault. You know, they let us use all of the stage and all of the lights, and they did everything they could to make us feel comfortable and to set us up for success. So that's a memorable moment for sure.
Nice.
I absolutely love
that. Yeah, pretty good producer too on a few of them too. A pretty good producer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I agree. The first two records that I did, I wasn't that happy with how they turned out from a production standpoint. I always thought that we should have self-produced the band. I would have loved to have produced all of the records from the very beginning. And I think that those first two were important to us. And so it's just a little disappointing that I wasn't able to produce those as well and bring the kind of energy to the records that people would see the band live. You know what I mean? We worked with a producer called Pat Moran, an English guy who was great. He did a lot of great things, but I'm not sure it was the perfect fit for us. In any case, that's history now. Now it's about looking forward and not looking back so much.
Which brings us back to your new album. So your new album, right? Your new album is coming out, and I don't remember the what dates do you have on the new album releasing?
It's been out since June.
June. Very nice.
It came out in June. The album we're talking about is Special Day, and it's 10 new tracks. I haven't done a completely new record for a number of years. And I'm really happy with this record. I'm proud of it. It's getting the kind of attention that I'm happy to see it get. And I have to also mention the first song on the record, Devil's Train, is one of my favorites. I was lucky enough to co-write it with a good friend of mine, a poet by the name of Glenn Bowie. He and I collaborated on that, and I don't generally do a lot of collaboration. So this was really a special moment. And I think the song turned out really well. I'm really proud of it. Glenn is a great poet, and he and I collaborated on a couple of the songs in the record, which I think make for strong lyrics and for pictures in your head. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to paint pictures in your head with music.
I think you do a great job.
I think that song is done really. Song is really done beautifully.
Yeah, thank you. I'm proud of the studio recording, and I'm also proud of the video. In fact, my buddy Glenn makes a cameo appearance in the vid. But I have to also talk about another musician on the record, Bruce Mattson. He's played keyboards and piano on a special day, and he and I also collaborated on one of the songs in the album. So Special Day, the record, is full of great collaborations with some terrific players, terrific musicians, guys who are also friends of mine, not just colleagues. And I'm really excited to see it doing so well. I hope it continues to do so.
I absolutely love that. And that's the one thing that I've noticed about your music. It's changed. It's changed since the 80s for sure. I could definitely tell there's a different feel from the first albums you created. Mm-hmm. This new album is just spectacular. It has a lot of really great hits that kind of just different varying type of music. And I absolutely love that about musicians, that it's not just the same track one after another. It has a good variety, and you can tell that the different collaboration. The thing that I noted was that there was a lot of, it was well done, well created. And I think that nowadays with newer producing tools, I think that albums can be created in a much more mastered way right off the bat. And you don't have to spend the umpteen million dollars or hours to be able to create it. But you still have to have some of that engineering skill, which you definitely have.
You know, I have a great recording team that I usually go into the studio with. I have a terrific engineer, a young guy by the name of Warren Babson. He and I have collaborated on my last three records, and we have a system. You know, having your own sort of clubhouse to record in, Bangasong Studios. I don't own it. But I'm there all the time. And so he and I have really forged a working relationship that I think really works. And we make good music at Bang. I'm proud of all the stuff. I produce a number of records. In fact, I'm working with a singer-songwriter here in this part of the country. His name is Alan Estes. I did his first record, Carnival Man, and I'm working on a new one with him right now. I also have worked with a lot of really talented people. Bob Wolfson is a great guitar player here in the area. His record is coming out now. He's doing an homage to Jimi Hendrix, and I had a chance to produce him. I work with a lot of artists, and I do a lot of different things, including film, that make for an interesting life.
That's kind of so. I was looking at your Wikipedia. You were very heavily touring in the 80s. And you were touring with bands like Scorpion, Def Leppard. You've already just a number of big rock bands that you were not the headliner, but you were opening acts for them. Amazing. Yeah. I can't even imagine being able to do that. That's, you know, that's like my dream come true, is being able to tour with a band like that.
It's cool. The coolest part of it is the time you spend on stage. The least cool part of it is everything else. Meaning traveling in a bus. Don't get me wrong. I've had my share of laughs on a tour bus, but you know, after 50 days or 60 or 70 or 80 days, you know, it gets a little tight, and people get a little cranky. And I'm not that knocked out about waiting for sound check to start. And I guess what I'm saying is, without trying to complain, I love the playing. I love the music part of it. One of our most fun tours was with Def Leppard back in those days in the 80s in the 80s. And those guys were had just released Pyromania. And so that tour was full of chills and spills and fun for the whole family.
You know, I bet.
sort of. but the time you spend on stage, you know, we got a chance to sit in with Def Leppard and play with him on stage during Pyromania, and it's fun. It's a great way to live a life if you're compelled to play guitar like I am.
Right. That's amazing.
And you do it well. And the influences that I was picking up, a lot of really great blues. Yeah. But I also felt that metal, that hard rock driving metal guitar in there that I just absolutely, that's what drew me. 80s hard rock is what drew me to play guitar. I can tell that you definitely had some great influences that helped you kind of drive that really edgy rock sound. But then additionally, I mean, I was listening, I Red House, and you can't, and like you were saying earlier in the green room, you can't do that song wrong. You can't, everybody knows what that song sounds like.
Yeah, and it's best to not screw it up.
Absolutely. And you didn't. And I think that you did it's almost a tribute to him in the fact that it was played so well and that those blues, a lot of people don't understand that guitar is about phrasing just as much as it is about hitting the right notes.
It is. And often it's about the notes you don't hit.
Right.
And the spaces you leave in the music.
Right.
I'm big on that, especially in terms of producing records. I like them to have what I call air. In other words, so that every space isn't filled with something. And when I recorded Red House, or if I do it live, I like to keep the air in so that you notice if I play something fast, a fast passage or a lick or something, it stands out instead of a flurry of notes that after a while don't mean anything.
And that's the same type of thing that B.B. King has, which you're saying you're influenced by B.B. King, which makes total sense, because B.B. King can just hold a note and trill it and just sit there with it for a couple minutes. And it's that anticipation that you're getting ready for him to just play it, and then he pauses maybe a little bit longer just to get you going. And that's what I heard in Red House. That's what I was hearing in your blues album. And blues, you know, to me, Andy, is one of those ones you can do that with, that you have to do that with.
What I picked up from B.B. King is playing guitar like a singer sings. He's the master of that. In fact, there's no one better. He doesn't approach the guitar as if it's like a grinder. And he's grinding out notes as fast as he can turn the handle. That's not it at all. He approaches playing the instrument and his phrasing like a singer sings. So if you do that, it's hard to go wrong. And that's what I've been trying to perfect ever since I started playing.
And I think you've done a real, I'm inspired. Let me put it that way. I've been playing guitar off and on for 40 plus years now. Mm-hmm. And I don't get inspired much by, to your point, a lot of flashy soloing where they're just playing a lot of, you know, scales and they're just fluttering through. There's a time and place for that. Van Halen did one of the best, but he still knew how to phrase it.
Exactly right. I'm glad you mentioned him. I got a chance to know him living in California for the number of years that I did. And he is one of the really few, what I would call metal guitarists, who transcended metal music. He was able to bring a whole different thing and discipline to hard rock and metal. And that made, I mean, even now I'm in awe of some of the stuff he's played. I see him play live in YouTube videos. It's like, whoa. This guy really knows how to hear it, not just how to play fast. He hears the music, and he also approaches his soloing like a singer. I love it. Big fan. Agree.
Oh, absolutely.
And have you heard his new son? Right. Have you heard Woofy? Woofy has a lot of the same type of you can tell that his passion and his dad has taught him well. I saw his group Mammoth. He went with he was the opener for Guns N' Roses like a couple weeks ago, and he plays just the same way. It's just really phenomenally great guitar playing. And it's still that metal driving, but he knows how to phrase it correctly, how to put the right stuff in. It's a mastery. And I think that there's very few guitarists, you're included in that, that can be able to do that. And then versatile. I think that you're one, actually, I would say that you're one of the most versatile guitarists I've ever seen, because you can play that metal, you're playing blues, and then you actually could play some of the Spanish style flamenco stuff that I was picking up on.
Yeah. Again, my interest in playing is not just to perfect a hammer on and pull off. You know, I'm interested in making, saying things. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see how you can say very much if you've just blown out 300 or 400 notes that are back to back. People stop hearing it. And I try to bring that discipline to all of my playing, whether it's electric or acoustic. I do a lot of acoustic shows during a given year, or at least I did prior to COVID. And that's something, the acoustic side of it is something I really enjoy. It's a different discipline, but I think it's just as important for my development as a player.
Absolutely. So
I think Gary's right too. Gary said that Randy Rhoads had stayed alive, he would have changed guitar playing for the, you know, which he would. He was an amazing guitarist, Randy Rhoads.
He was. He certainly was. And he also seemed to have an ear. That's what it really is. It's not in the hands. It's in the ears. If you can hear a thing and can play what you hear, you're far beyond the person who really doesn't have a very good ear for picking up nuance and subtlety and different tonality and styles.
Tonality, that's a huge one. And I've been just to be able to get the sound. And I think that with you, I could hear in different, you are able to pick up that in, depending on what you're playing, you're able to do different styles and you could hear that tone difference, and you were definitely dialing it all in.
Yeah,
to be able to play that style. And I could hear like there's a different tone that goes with blues than it does with metal. And people don't always understand that there is, even within different rock genres, there's different tones that have to go with it and different guitar type tones that you have to hit, and even different pedals. The reason why you have to. But I hear a lot of great stuff coming out of this new album as well.
I think my favorite living guitarist, Andy, is Jeff Beck. And I think it's because he's probably has the best ears of any guitar player I can think of that's living. Understanding nuance and understatement and not playing too much. And when he does play something that's fast or flashy, it's really impressive. It's because he doesn't do it all the time.
That's the sign of it. And I was watching this, one of these Instagram posts, and it shows like the years of progression. Like your first year, you're clunking on the guitar. You're just learning how to play. Yeah. Then you have those guys that are just like, hey, I learned scales and here are all my scales. And then you have the seasoned guitarist that then knows how to phrase, get the right tones, how to do the right stuff to make music. And that's the difference. And that's the reason why they're pros and other people are just, you know, intermediate, maybe I would say would be the best or the word of saying it.
It's almost like conversation with another person. Sometimes it's good to just shut up, you know, and let the other person speak. And when I'm recording or making a record or even live, I like to have the interaction of the guys and letting everyone have their turn. I play with such killer musicians and really have for the last 20 years of my life. Right now I'm working with a drummer, Marty Richards. I'm also work with another drummer who is amazing in Axis, John Anthony. I'm blessed with an overabundance of talented guys who have great ears and understand when to not play and right. and when to let it loose.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. Well said. Well said. So I know James has probably had some more questions. Let's hear some more questions really quick.
I love his
research. He does the best research. If he can talk.
I was just going to say, what's been like the... Yeah, that's one thing I have to get in check too, is my connection. Because I'm literally right here with the modem. I have to either yeah. a computer yeah, or a new computer, whatever. Or upgrade my modem or something. It's crazy. Plus, it's been raining too, so that's also has an effect on it as well. So,
Florida. Oh, but yeah, Florida.
I was going to say, what's been like the most... what's been like the work on, I guess?
You gotta say it again, buddy.
I lost him. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
Sorry.
James.
I was gonna say, what? Can you hear me now?
You're going in and out, bud. I feel like yeah. I'm on my Zoom not? Meetings at work. I feel like I'm in Zoom meetings. Am I on now? Yeah, I know.
No, sorry, it's sort of like coming in and out, so it's hard to understand.
Yeah, yes.
Sorry about that, buddy.
Oh my God. Still, yeah, I'm sorry too.
Well, let me share this.
Still the same?
Yeah, we're getting sort of like bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So go ahead, John. You were going to say something.
I was just about to say, while James can check his connection, I'm doing, between now and the end of the year, I'm doing some shows here in my part of my neck of the woods, New England. I'm doing a concert on October 9th, Saturday, October 9th, at Kowloon in Saugus, Massachusetts. It's Rocking for Veterans concert series. My band Axis is doing that. I'm also playing with one of my favorite guitar players. December 12th at the City Winery in Boston, Johnny A. Johnny A will be joined by myself and James Montgomery and Sal Baglio. And finally, I'm doing my yearly Christmas show, holiday show. It's not really a Christmas show. It's called Seaside Yuletide. That's December 4th at the Chalon-Lieu Performance Center. So anybody listening who's in the New England area, I just wanted to let you know what's happening. And when you can see me before 2022 comes in.
Which is happening really quick. Your new album came out in June.
Yes.
Then now you're also, what is it like to go live again? I mean, you were out for, good year. How's it feel to hit that stage again? And you were talking about how exciting it is.
Yeah,
and I agree. The energy is right there. How are you feeling about it?
Here's the thing. I'm sure you've been watching the news, so you see it looks like we're getting ready to start the ball rolling again, in a bad way, with the outbreak of the COVID variant. That being said, we're trying to book as many shows that we can do right now while we can do them, and so my hope is that I can continue to promote Special Day, the record. And I can do these shows that I've mentioned with my friends, Johnny A. and Sal Baglio and James Montgomery and all my buddies who live around here. Remember, I told you, this is an artist community here. We're a community of musicians and painters and photographers. So we're all sort of holding our breath and hoping that we don't have to go back into hibernation. I'm excited to play again, but I have some nervousness about it. Because I'm not sure where it's all going to play out, how it's all going to play out.
Yeah, I agree. I you know, it's too bad, and I totally understand the reasoning for everything, and I don't like getting into the political things or anything, but I do think that, you know, it is unfortunate that we just had, and it might be just a small break, but in the interim, you were able to produce new music with friends. So sometimes that had that advantage to be able to hone in on some studio time that maybe you weren't doing prior.
You're exact, Andy, you put your finger right on it. That's how Special Day came about. I started the record at the beginning of 2020. You know, that was the year that none of us were able to play, you know, and none of us were able to continue to tour. So all of us, all of my colleagues and my friends, we all sort of were faced with more time than we've ever had on our hands to slow down and plant a garden. My wife and I planted a vegetable garden in the backyard, and I spent my time composing Special Day, not knowing it was going to be a record. I didn't know it was going to be an album until I was sort of halfway through it. And I looked at my engineer, Warren, and I said, geez, you know, this sounds like it might not be a bad record. And so it was about halfway through the process, because really what I was doing was trying to do something creative with my time and energy. You know, there's only so much daytime TV a man can watch. and believe me, I tried to watch it all. But ending up in the studio was the smartest thing and the best thing and the most therapeutic thing that I could do. And it resulted in this record that I'm so proud of and so happy about. And I'm glad that you guys have been listening to it all week. You told me you've had it in rotation. That makes me happy. Absolutely. I'm glad you're playing Devil's Train, one of my favorites. And I couldn't be more happy with how the record turned out and what's going on in terms of people becoming aware of it now.
Yeah, and that's the really awesome, that's the really great opportunity that we as content creators, we're fairly new, me and James are, as you can tell, we're still working out the bugs for internet and things like that. But the thing about it is that we get an opportunity to really do something for musicians and giving back. My parents are both musicians, and so being able to be part of that and see the struggles that up-and-coming musicians are, and even after you've made it, how many times you still have to go market. You can't just go out and just do nothing, and then things will just happen. You know, albums will just, you'll make an album, but you still have to go market. Then you have to
and
go.
People will find tour. You. No, it doesn't. It doesn't work that way.
It does not.
You know, when the internet came about, it was a good news, bad news for musicians. The good news was it supplanted the need of having a major label. Having been on my share of major labels, I can tell you that there's the business side of it is not that cool for songwriters and for people trying to make a living at playing music. So the internet allowed us all to go worldwide. The bad news is it's worldwide. And so people can't sort of stumble across you. You have to help them find you, whether that's Spotify or Facebook or Instagram or any number of other outlets. You have to seek that out. You have to make it so that people can see you and find your videos and find your website and that sort of thing. If you do that, you've got a shot at being heard. If you don't do that, you almost have no shot at all.
No, people can't just stumble on you.
No.
The amazing thing that I saw, you're one of the very few artists that I've run across that has an excellent Wikipedia. You know, it really demonstrates kind of your story, your journey very well. I felt that the Wikipedia write-ups were really accurate and helpful to understand where your journey has taken you.
Yeah.
What an amazing career, and still
totally
going,
right.
still going around music, which is such a giving of love and passion. And I can tell that that's what you enjoy after 30, at least 30 plus years. I'm not going to give you more, but 30 plus years. But it's what a beautiful career. What are some of the highlights that you feel that you've had over this career?
Well, as I was saying before, it's really difficult for me to choose moments because all of them have some significance. You know, was it the time I got to do a music video with one of my heroes, Jeff Beck? That certainly counts. That's up there.
That's amazing.
I also got a chance to meet B.B. King and to actually touch his hand and feel his energy at a show in Hollywood. Was it meeting a protege of mine, Chris Pierce, who's one of the most prolific singer-songwriters you can find anywhere. And this kid is an amazing singer. I met him when he was 17 years old. So that counts to me as a really special moment in my life that's hard to ignore. And my life has been full of those kinds of moments. I, as I said before, I'm lucky. I'm a lucky guy. I've had opportunities that many people will have never had or dream of having. And I've had a chance to work with some of my idols and be in the same room with them and ask them questions and travel the world.
That's what I love to hear. And what I can tell is also that there's passion that's created this journey for you, because you can't do this without passion. People don't understand that you have to be willing to sing in the rain, do things that most people would never understand as a musician to be able to accomplish your dream. And it sounds like you've just been really blessed. And it sounds like with this new album, with the collaborations, you've kind of come to that place to where a lot of great musicians get to, where they're able to play with their heroes, their friends, and create great music. And you're no longer striving to get that number one record. You're just wanting to make things because it's great music.
The smartest decision I ever made was to stop chasing commercial success as is defined by record companies, big labels. And I mean that. It was liberating for me as a writer to not feel like, what am I going to do? I got to come up with a follow-up to Life Takes a Life. And how am I going to do that? And I made a conscious decision to do it for my own love of it, and that the dollars would follow. The money would follow my passion, not the other way around. And I've been really lucky at that. I've made more than a couple of bucks, and have been able to live a life that a lot of people don't get to live, and do things that some people don't get to do. And like I said, I'm lucky in that way. I feel blessed. That's the only word I can find.
I think that with talent, you can go a long way, but without the passion, you have to have that passion and that heart to be able to be successful. Because anybody can, a lot of people can play, and you can go to, I remember talking to somebody a long time ago, because I thought about becoming a professional musician at one point and following that whole guitar dream. And then my mom kind of talked me out of it and said, you can go to LA and there's a dime a dozen of people that can play Van Halen like stuff.
It's true.
But without the passion and the drive, and being able to sleep in a van, sleep on the tour buses, being able to eat food that you probably would not want, barely eating at times when you were younger, I'm sure.
It's true.
And
that wasn't the motivation though. You're
right.
I was talking to a buddy of mine. There's a guitarist by the name of Sal Baglio. He and I are best buddies. He plays in a big band who had some great success also in the 80s, the Stompers. He and I were talking the other day, and both of us see this the same way. It stopped being about a chase of chart success years ago and started becoming a labor of love and passion that can sustain you through times where you're not making enough money, or sustain you through periods where you're not sure anyone is hearing you. You have to find sustenance somehow and a way to be nourished.
Right.
And the way to find that, the secret, is in the music. You have to believe it. You have to live it. And it has to be something that you embrace. You can't help but do it. That's the way I put it. I can't imagine some other life or some other way of being.
That's the key right there. And that's the drop mic moment. I'm going to tell you that right there. Because that's exactly the piece that my mom talks about. She taught chorus for 40 years.
Yeah.
And she said to be able to do this for 40 years, it's about passion and sure. love and being able to understand that the music is more than, and that's your legacy.
Yeah. And again, I make the analogy to food. It's sustenance. When I get a chance to play with my brothers and make music for people who have bought a ticket, it's joyous. It's celebratory. It's wonderful. I feel like I've taken a vitamin shot. You know, I leave a venue high from it. And that is what keeps me. That's what keeps all of me, all of my brothers and I, my brothers meaning my music brothers who do this. This is what is important to us, and this is why we get up in the morning.
Absolutely. And it's a beautiful reason to get up in the morning. So on some of the songs that you have on your new album, do you have a particular favorite or a particular few moments that you really thought were really fun in the studio that you can share?
I really liked recording Devil's Train. It's one of my favorites on the record. It's fun. And you know, someone asked me once if I have messages, and I'm really leery about soapboxing, you know, and pontificating about my own lyrics. I like people to listen to music that I've recorded and find their own story in it and be entertained just like you would if you were watching a feature film. You know, you don't have it explained to you. Either a movie is working on its own merits and you're enjoying it for what it is, or it's not working. So when it comes to my album Special Day, Devil's Train is one of my favorites. I think it's really visual and fun, and you can see the characters. Oh, there's a song called Señor García, one of my favorite songs. I loved recording that. I get a chance to sort of channel my inner Dylan. And I tell a story about the devil visiting me in my bedroom. And it's fun. And I had a fun time recording it. And I hope people that hear that, Señor García, enjoy it too.
Very nice. And the fact that you said a little bit of Dylan, I know that Bob Dylan was one of your influences.
Yeah.
And so it's fun to do a song that has that kind of influence. Good. Love it.
Bob Dylan painted pictures in my head. He did. You know, it wasn't about his singing, because that wasn't his thing. His thing was writing those words that would conjure images in my young brain that I couldn't shake, you know. And I can't pick one, because like a Rolling Stone, holy cow, Once Upon a Time You Felt So Fine. That lyric is as visual a lyric as there ever was. And that's one of my favorite songs of his, although there are dozens. And again, that inspired me to want to write visually, to write lyrics that spoke in a visual way, that painted pictures in your head.
I love that. And that's one of those things that when I talk to my dad, who's a composer, that's exactly what he tries to demonstrate, is he wants to help create that for you, but he doesn't necessarily tell you that's the story. Everybody's going to get something different. And that's the great thing about musicians, is that they're able to paint a story, but you have to put some of the stuff, it's, you know, some of it's color by numbers. you put your own stuff into it.
You have to write a thing from a writer's standpoint.
Right.
The best, most successful thing that's written is the thing that you see yourself in. When you read it or when you hear it, you see yourself in that story, or you place someone that you know in that story, someone close to you, so that you own part of it. You know what I mean? That's what successful writing is. You know, anybody can rhyme, you know, moon, spoon, and June, but it's not that easy to tell a narrative in a way that you don't know it's being, you don't recognize it as somebody saying things at you, but you just hear the story and you make your own pictures.
Very true.
Does that make any sense?
It totally does. Yeah, it does. And the fact that you also mentioned that you have a poet that you kind of associate with kind of shows me that that's where I can tell that that's from your lyrics, that that's where you've got some poetry involved, which is part of, it's art. It's not just music, it's art as well, because poetry has that ability to actually put imagery into your head as well. So you're poet in music, and I just absolutely love that. It's awesome.
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you when we first started, I did a lot of co-writing that I just really don't do it. I think the reason why I didn't do it before is because I don't think I ever really felt comfortable for someone to tell my story. You know, I feel the best at telling my story. Someone else might be able to tell theirs, but I can tell mine the best. But what happened was I met my buddy Glenn, who I found things in common with. And we kind of saw things the same way, and we kind of saw the world in the same way. And so I read some of his poetry and went, geez, that sounds like something I would have written. And before you knew it, we were off and rolling.
I love that. That's great. James is back. Another question? Yes, we can, sir. And so all we right, got about 9 minutes before we let John go.
Hit me, James. Hit me.
I was going to say, what are some ways that you prepare yourself in like your writing process for like from your music when you first started to albums that you write now or in the future?
From a lyric standpoint, do you mean?
Yeah. The lyrics, and I guess that would make sense.
I don't prepare. I don't. My best writing, you know where it's done? It's done behind the wheel. When I'm driving, there's something about my brain that is free. Maybe that's not a good thing, you know, but I am at my most creative when I'm behind the wheel. So these days, I don't even think about it. I don't do any preparation or, you know, I don't have a blank legal pad. You know what I mean? And it's sitting right in front of me and it's blank and I'm trying to figure out what to put on it. That never happens. Right. If I'm going to the grocery store, I am writing right then from the time I get behind the wheel and drive and turn off the radio and just listen to my own voice, my inner voice. Yeah. Boom. I'm off and rolling. And that's what happened with this record. The exceptions on Special Day were Make a Little Room. I wrote that with a wonderful pianist, Bruce Mattson. How Does It Feel? How Does It Feel? I wrote that with a wonderful woman, Dawn. I hope she's listening. And so those moments seem to come easier and easier. The older I get, it's easier for me to channel that part of my imagination. I was telling you, hey, Andy, I was telling you about this song on the record called Señor Garcia. Listen to that when we get off the air, okay? You listen to that and you tell me that's not a movie in your head as I lay it out for you. I think I'll enjoy hearing your feedback on that one.
No, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
And I will, now that I know it's kind of a Dylan's, I'm going to definitely pay more attention to that imagery because
to that Señor Garcia.
Yeah, I will for sure. Because I'm, because of the guitar part of me that wants to hear guitar, I normally don't focus on the lyrics as much just because I love guitar. And so that's the first thing I hear. I'm drawn to that.
Then the song I have for you on Special Day would be Kiss the Sky. Listen to Kiss the Sky. There's a the solo stuff at the end of all over the song, really. Right. But at the end of the song, I blow my mind. And so I'm playing everything, everywhere. You know, I'm playing one hand, no hands, you know, And I think that's for the guitar muse in you. If you listen to Kiss the Sky, that should scratch that itch.
For sure. I think I did. I think there's several of those songs. I think I like blues. I really am really fascinated with blues and the mechanics of blues because of the fact that it just makes me feel something very deep. So, and I could tell that you are that same type of guitarist, that that's what blues is for you. It's like coming home.
It's, you know, it's a way of telling your life story. That's what it is. The blues is a way of, in a way, country music, at least what it used to be, shared that. It was a way of telling your story in your own voice, in your authentic voice. For me, I call what I do future blues, because I don't think that I'm looking back beyond my influences, of course. I'm looking forward as a way of exploring that style of music in new and different ways.
I love it. I love it.
Nice.
So I'm going to have my friends that are guitarists. What I'm going to ask you a couple gear nerd questions.
Yeah. Go ahead.
What is your, I saw that you play a Strat. What is your favorite, but I still will go, what is your favorite guitar and what is it that makes it your favorite?
I have several guitars, as you might imagine. But the Fat Man, which is a Olympic white 1963 Stratocaster, is my favorite. And the reason why is hard to pinpoint. I really can't explain it. I forget I'm playing it when I'm playing it. That means that the spirit is just moving through me. You know what I mean? I'm not thinking about the notes. When I have that guitar on, I'm not thinking about anything. I am completely channeling whatever is coming out of it. And I feel like I'm not even playing it. The spirit is playing it. I am just along for the ride. And so the Fat Man makes me feel like taking a ride. I'm just on his, I'm on his wavelength, man. That Stratocaster has got me. I don't have it.
I love that. That's awesome.
Nice.
So blows me away. Love it. Absolutely love it.
I see you got a Marshall amp behind you, Andy.
I do. I love Marshalls. Some of my, I'm a classic tube, and then they also have made some other ones that I absolutely love. I did buy, so I'm going to try out the new Spark, which is that new practice amp that you can go get different tones, and there's like 10,000 tones. That. I'm going to try it out. I bought it, and I get it Friday, and so I want to hear what I can do with it. It has a digital interface that you can plug right into and use Pro Tools, so
nice.
We'll see. I'll be able to play it a little bit. I still love my Marshall. I keep buying new pedals. I've been really playing the wah-wah pedal lately, just absolutely enjoying.
Hey, listen, speaking from one guitar player to another, of course you're buying pedals. That's what we do. That's what we do. I could show you a picture of one of my pedal boards. Just one of them. You know, it's what we do. Hey, this is how it works. We figure out, I know what I need. I need a new distortion. And you go and find one you think that works, and you buy it. And after a while, you go, you know what I need? I need a new distortion. And you buy it. And that goes on for a while. And suddenly, time passes, and you go, you know what I need? I need a distortion. And before you know it, you have a pile of pedals, like I do. And so it's just part of it. You know, it's part of the guitar player landscape, right?
I agree.
Everybody, anybody who's listening to this that plays guitar knows exactly what I mean. You know it's true. You have a drawer full of pedals. You know you do.
Indeed. And you can never get enough. I try to explain that to my wife, that this is what we do.
Don't even try.
You can't.
He loves you, but she doesn't understand. Andy, you and I have to stick together. This is what we have to do, because we understand that we are driven by this. We must buy that new amp. We must have that new distortion pedal. We must. And another guitar? Well, you can never have too many guitars now, can you?
That's right. I bought two like about a month. Two. Well, actually,
there you go. See,
I bought three in the last month and a half, and I was like, "How much I have to try out this new Les Paul?" I got a studio, one of the studio ones. So it's the lighter ones. Yeah, totally love it.
There are no bad guitars. I love them all.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Well,
guys, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, thank you for coming on. That's where we're heading.
It is. Yeah. Well. It's part of the new show piece. This is, I think, our on the new channel. This is our sixth or seventh episode, and we're so excited, John, to have you on. This was
happy to be here and talk with you guys. I love talking about guitars. I love talking about music, and you guys were a lot of fun. James, I hope you can work out that connection.
Yeah.
The connection area. So that the next time we talk. You can hit me with those probing questions. I know you have them. I know you do.
He does.
I know, James, I know there's some probing questions you wanted to hit me with. We'll have to save it for next time.
Absolutely, John. We'll have you on. We'll have you on, and we'll definitely be able to talk some more music. What a blessing we had today, folks. What a career, what a great musician you are, John, and hearing some of your insight and some of your just great stories. I appreciate it, and we'll catch you all next time. We appreciate all of our guests as always, and just a little promo, we actually have a website now too, tastylicksmusic.com. Go check it out. It has all of our links to all of our social media, and it has all of our upcoming guests, just like John is on it today. So
Thanks very much, guys. I really appreciate being here. Thank you.
Absolutely. John, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you all later. All right. Catch you on the flip side.
Bye-bye.